Griffiths again. He scores again! Sensational! Lightning strikes twice!
Good play by Gemland again.
3-1! James McFadden scores for Scotland! France are stunned and Scotland lead in Paris!
Hi, and welcome to the Pure Football Podcast, the unbiased Scottish voice giving you in-depth insight into football from the local part to the World Cup. I'm Owen Brown, your regular Pure Football co-host, writer at Stats Bomb, Scouted Football and others, and a guy who's just had a steak pie supper for his dinner on a Monday night. I'm blaming my wife for that. She was feeling pretty in the mood for something self-indulgent after having a four-hour Zoom call for work today. But as a result, I think because of the kind of stodginess of the steak pie, I might sound a little bit more like a Sunday League centre-back with my words on the show than a late-in-my-feet Premiership-level winger. But with me, hopefully to share the load of that and sound a bit more nimble to me, is Pure Football founder, regular podcast host, Market Insights football recruitment consultant, Gavin Miller. Gavin, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really good, and my dinner was not as stodgy as yours. I had a beef teriyaki noodle type thing, veggie okay. beef stuff, which was really good. But I'm maybe a little bit jealous of a steak pie supper. That's what dreams are made of.
Yeah, it was good. Is that banned in your household now? Are we fully on? Or can you get vegan steak pie suppers? I don't know. It's something to
probably look into. Probably get barred if you ask for that.
Quite possibly. But anything's possible, right? There's kind of impossible burgers and beyond burgers now and stuff. So, something to look into. Anyway, we've had a whole lot of podcasts and website content out recently at Pure Football, so please do check those out, particularly things like the Pure Championship and League One previews if you've not. And also, please consider leaving us a review if you're able to. We really appreciate that. I feel like we got a lot of new listeners, particularly as a result of those preview shows. And I hope that if you are new listeners as a result of that, you've stuck around. If so, welcome. Hit that subscribe button. But also just want to give a kind of shout out to long-time listeners. You're very much appreciated. And kind of was just thinking this evening that I hope everybody's still kind of continuing to be okay through whatever type of lockdown and really restrictions and effect all this has had on your work and life and, you know, relationships and football watching. And thanks for kind of sticking with us in the absence of any kind of commutes or however you might previously have listened to the show. With all that kind of said, let's get into it. And it's a fairly obvious choice as to where to kick off for us this week. Celtic versus Rangers, the Old Firm, the Glasgow Derby, the game Nicola Sturgeon thought arch-capitalist Sky Sports would possibly consider giving away for free, the who gives a fuck what it's really called Derby, etc. Anyway, to me and you, Gavin, it's Celtic and Rangers. And Rangers obviously won 2-0 at an empty Celtic Park, so it was devoid of fans and fight and much quality in the park, at least from the hosts. In fact, Celtic had no shots on target despite having about 57% possession and about 100 touches more of the ball than Rangers. I've set kind of Gavin up with a few questions, a wee bit of match analysis, some tactics, and a little bit of kind of bigger picture thinking about Celtic and Rangers in the match. So here we go. So firstly, Gavin, what were your thoughts on the team's lineups?
So I guess there was a lot of Twitter noise going about what the Celtic lineup was going to be. There was, which has now been a sort of confirmed leak of the lineup, which obviously Neil Lennon has voiced his displeasure with. But I was really surprised to see Stephen Welsh come in. Klamala being a starter over Ajeti and Griffiths, who are still not yet fully match fit, was a bit of a surprise. It just felt like on the Celtic side, I was surprised that they stuck with the 3-5-2, considering it meant that they would have to bring in Stephen Welsh. So that was something for me that was really, really surprising. But I'm sure we'll get to that later on.
On the note of a couple of people you mentioned there, let's go straight to Klamala and up front. So if Celtic were going to pick the 3-5-2, which, you know, Lennon has kind of stuck by, I guess you would say, due to, you know, Beaton and El Hamed being unavailable due to, you know, COVID-19, there maybe weren't any other options. But Welsh, in terms of up front, though, there were maybe other options. So Edwards not available, but of course Griffiths and Ajeti were both on the bench.
Yep.
Could you see any particular reason why Klamala went, was the choice for Lennon to be part of that front two in this match?
Yeah,
prior to the game, at least, you know, what do you think was the thinking behind it?
So, Klamala, when he played in Poland, was very much on the shoulder, you know, wanting to get into 1v1 situations, using his pace to get through and to create opportunities. He's not someone I would particularly say was a build-up striker or a player that's going to be involved with smart movement the way that Edwards sort of is. So what I was thinking is that potentially here what Celtic were going to look to do was, or they were anticipating that Rangers might have tried to press them really high up the park, and Klamala and El Yunusi's pace in behind might have been the way to create chances against, you know, Hollander, who is, I guess, positionally smart, but he's not the quickest. That must have been the thinking from Lennon going into this game.
So maybe more of an idea that the Rangers fullbacks would be higher as they normally are, and bit more of a pressing system that turned out to be okay. And how about at left wing back, Diego Laxalt obviously started for Celtic, making his debut in this match. How do you think Greg Taylor would feel being bumped for Laxalt? I know that, you know, maybe, you know, Taylor is obviously a downgrade on Tierney and hasn't necessarily been somebody that you or I would see as being a long-term first choice for Celtic, but it must feel a bit aggrieving to have that happen, surely.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I don't think Greg Taylor's done anything particularly wrong this season. I wouldn't say that he's been outstanding, but he's not merited being dropped for the Old Firm. I mean, he played for Scotland against the Czech Republic. Laxalt hadn't played, I think, a competitive game for quite a while. So it was definitely an interesting choice by Neil Lennon, and certainly a baptism of fire for Diego Laxalt.
Yeah, I guess you would maybe say without the fans there, maybe it's a little bit less intense. And obviously, you know, he has played in, you know, intense atmospheres before, but just seemed to me like maybe a little bit of a bigger decision that needed to be made. What about in terms of the Rangers lineup? I guess while I'm on the subject, people potentially feeling aggrieved. Do you think John McLaughlin has the right to be a little bit aggrieved at being bumped for McGregor?
Yes and no. So I would imagine that with McLaughlin's play when McGregor got injured, that, and this is a bit of an assumption, but I would imagine that there's been a conversation around about these two, and that it's likely to be rotation over the course of the season. Yes, I think McLaughlin's done absolutely nothing wrong. You know, I think he's better with the ball at his feet than Alan McGregor. He's got better distribution. So, and I think his actual performance in terms of, you know, making saves this season has been excellent. So he could feel aggrieved, but I do think that, or I'm assuming here that Rangers have had these sort of conversations internally to say between the two players, you know, McGregor's now, what, 38, McLaughlin's 33. So I think it's maybe just a case of managing these players' minutes just, you know, throughout the course of the season, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on.
I think that's a fair argument generally, right? If you're going to say to these guys you're going to rotate throughout the season, but if you're McLaughlin in this situation, I would be accepting of it. I'm sure McLaughlin is. He's a serious professional. McGregor is obviously a club legend. But the only reason he's not being played in this game is because it was the game against Celtic, right?
Well, I'm not sure if that's necessarily true, because McGregor played against Galatasaray, played against Willem II. So
he's not playing in the big games then?
But yeah, that's the way that it's coming across to me.
As much as you accept that as a professional and so on, and you know what other choices McLaughlin has, and he probably knew coming into the club that nominally he was the number two, I would just feel a little bit like, well, you know, I've done everything I could. You know, that record of clean sheets, good performances. Sure. What do I need to do to be trusted in the big games?
Sure.
Just, you know, that's all. But anyway, let's move on from him. The final kind of point in terms of the lineup for Rangers, I guess, that was quite interesting was Brandon Barker playing. Yep. What was he in for? Is he just incredible in training? Are we, you know, not seeing something? Or, you know, tell me what the tactical idea behind this was. You know, let's kind of be serious about it.
I think if you look at Brandon Barker's starts in Rangers games, they actually tend to be in the bigger games. I remember him starting against Porto away. I remember him starting against Bayer Leverkusen. So it seems to me that he's got a very specific purpose off the ball and the threat of his pace in behind. So I would say that if you see Brandon Barker on the Rangers team sheet against, you know, one of the bigger teams, there's going to be a more conservative approach with how Rangers are going to play out the game. I think it's a bit of a telltale when you compare that to, you know, what Hadji's going to give you. I think Barker's, you know, sort of overall energy and ability to go, you know,
it's very
longer
much about the kind of specific skill set, right? Yeah,
yes,
that pace in behind, and you know, maybe we'll come on to that when we talk about the tactics yet next.
Yep.
In fact, let's just move on to that. So, in terms of the tactical setups, let's kind of look at what both teams used on a day. Even with the three centre backs that were kind of missing, so we know that Julien and Abdul Hamid and Beaton were out, Lennon persisted with the 3-5-2. I guess the first thing for me to ask is, what do you think the reasons are that Lennon wants to continue with that system? You know, what do you think would be the plus points in his mind?
I think it's a case of the squad is imbalanced, and I think it's trying to keep players happy. I think you mentioned it before about, you know, the amount of forwards that they have just now. So if they play a 4-2-3-1, how do you manage Edward, Ajeti, Klamala, Griffiths? You know, it's very
basically got four forwards there that potentially should all be thinking they're starters. Also El Yunusi as well. And yeah, so carry on, sorry.
Yeah, and I think obviously with injuries to Mikey Johnston, James Forrest, you don't then have natural wingers. So it probably makes it more difficult to play a 4-2-3-1 that you would maybe want to. You've only really got El Yunusi and potentially, you know, Turnbull or Klamala out wide, and yeah, it just doesn't feel like a natural fit. So I think it's just a case of an imbalanced squad that's picking up injuries in the wrong places, which is making it more difficult. But it comes back to, I think we've said this before a little bit about Celtic's recruitment, and I think there is just a few question marks over the actual strategy in terms of the type of player that they're going to sign. And whilst they're unlucky to have some of these key players injured, you know, it doesn't hide away the actual facts that they're extremely light in wider areas. So,
we'll maybe come on to that as we, you know, talk about the kind of the future and our kind of overall conclusions. But I think that's a fair point, Gavin. And I think that's kind of worrying, that if potentially the only reason you're selecting a tactical system is kind of because the way that the recruitment has worked has kind of forced it on you. It doesn't seem like the natural kind of positive reason for using it. In terms of the 3-5-2, you know, obviously Celtic are still second in the league. You know, they've done very well in terms of results. But we have seen throughout the season, you know, some missteps in terms of other games, you know, struggling to make chances. Are there any particular deficiencies in your view of that 3-5-2 system as it is for Celtic, or the way they're using it?
I think there's far too many passive passes. That was quite difficult to say there. But yeah, far too many sort of passes that are just between the centre-backs and Scott Brown, or between the centre-backs and Cal McGregor. And then, you know, it becomes quite congested in the central areas. And when I watch Celtic this season, it feels like it's very much they're relying on individual players being better than another individual player rather than having a, you know, a pattern of play or a tactical setup that's going to allow them to create chances. It very much does feel like, you know, asking Ryan Christie to shoot from 25 yards or, you know, these sort of things that just don't seem like a sustainable way of creating chances. I think
in many ways you could say that that's the kind of story of this game, and to an extent the story of these two teams at the moment, and the sort of way that they seem to be going, that in many ways maybe Celtic have relied on individuals. Rangers are showing maybe another way that's not quite the same as that, that they're not necessarily reliant on the individual. And maybe this game has shown to Celtic what can happen if both you have an opponent that's ready for those individuals and can set up well tactically, and also if you're missing some of those individuals that you do need in order to be, you know, performing at the top level. Anything else you wanted to say about the kind of system deficiencies for Celtic at all?
Yeah, I'm just not actually, with the three centre-backs that Celtic have, in fact, all the centre-backs in general, I'm going to be a bit of a general statement here, but apart from Ayer, I don't think any of them are actually that good at stepping forward with the ball and playing passes from deeper areas. So I think you've got two players, you know, we've seen it with Duffy during this game and Welsh as well. They're not comfortable carrying the ball forward. They've not got the ability to play, you know, passes that are going to break the lines. It's very safe between those, and it puts a lot of pressure on Christopher Ayer to try and actually do something when he has the ball. And I guess the stats show it in this game, he had a lot of the ball. It's not a sustainable way, I think, right now for Celtic, is my overarching point.
Sure. I think the contrast is really telling with other kind of big dominant clubs, at least ones that are kind of dominant in terms of possession in our league. Like, if you do see another club of that sort playing a three at the back, generally they've got kind of on the both sides people that are willing to bring and good at bringing the ball out, maybe even playing a fullback on the, you know, the side, yeah, as a central back or even a midfielder. And certainly the guy in the middle is still really capable of making good passes. If you don't, then you just end up in this sort of situation. And I think having the 3-5-2 with the type of players that are in it in terms of the front two compounds this. You know, even if there might be other teams that maybe play a three at the back, but pass it a lot better and have better passers and better systems for passing, the structure looks different up front as well. You know, they're maybe they've got more people that can move out to the wings. You know, there's less of a kind of fragmented thing where the wing backs get kind of blocked off and isolated. I'm thinking here of, you know, teams like Atalanta where it's all down, yep, the sides, or even like a team like Arsenal where you've got, you know, Tierney as the kind of nominal left sided centre back, but sort of a full back as well. And then you've got kind of, you know, don't know, 3-4-3, but quite fluid ahead of them, these kind of things. Or like a Man City where maybe they're, you know, the game against Arsenal at the weekend there where they were sort of playing like a, I don't know, a 3-3-4, but, you know, of your three at the back, you've got Ake playing as basically as a left back and White Walker as a right back, and, you know, they're all capable of moving the ball on. Anyway, so that's kind of our maybe general concerns with the Celtic system. Talk to me about Rangers. What's kind of the Rangers tactical setup generally, and how did they handle Celtic? What is it that allowed them, apart from what Celtic maybe weren't doing well, how do Rangers limit a team like this to just five shots?
I think what Rangers done really well is they made the central areas very compact. And one thing that really stood out to me was the performances of Glenn Kamara and Scott Arfield as the wide central midfielders. They tucked in really well. Mm-hmm. To eliminate the spaces for when Celtic did play out to Frimpong, he pretty much had to play it back to whoever he got it from, and it was much the same with Laxalt, or they had to cross from deep. There wasn't space for them to then run in and attack, which then sort of nullified them in terms of the progression of the ball, and Rangers then got back into their shape and sort of allowed Celtic just to play in almost like a sort of, you know, like a sort of wide V type shape between the centre backs and the sort of wing backs, and Rangers were comfortable allowing Celtic to have the possession in those areas. And whenever Celtic, you know, or rarely tried to go through the central areas, I think you've seen Rangers do a really good job of turning the ball over, winning the ball back, and then, you know, quickly countering on Celtic. You know, there was chances in the game that came from, you know, turnovers from Celtic's sort of lack of ideas. And obviously it must have got really frustrating for, you know, Callum McGregor, Scott Brown and Cham. And it just felt like specifically that Celtic had almost over-anticipated what Rangers were going to do, and then had no idea how to combat that when they didn't do what Rangers were expecting. But what I would say is, we've seen Rangers play Celtic, what, you know, the last three or four times now in Old Firm, Glasgow derbies, or whatever you want to call them, derbies. And Rangers have, or Steven Gerrard at least, and Michael Beale have had Neil Lennon's number, I think, in terms of the overall performances in games. And they've approached it in different ways and played Celtic in different formations. I just worry whether there's enough of a tactical concept around about what Celtic are trying to do. You know, you've got Neil Lennon, John Kennedy, Gavin Strachan as the sort of coaching team. None of them, and obviously they're all ex-players, but none of them stand out to me as being, like, you know, real, not philosophical as such, but very tactically astute type coaches, or in the case of Neil Lennon as a manager. I think it's very much about, you know, 1v1 you're better, and, you know, sort of rallying them.
What's really the idea tactically beyond, well, maybe we'll switch from a 3-5-2 to a 4-2-3-1
exactly.
or back? You know, it's like, you know, that's not really a system. That's not really a game plan. So, yeah, I would agree with all that, Gavin. I was really impressed by Rangers. I mean, as normal, you know, kind of, like you said, that kind of narrow 4-3-3, 4-3-2-1, whatever you want to see it as, where they really do protect the middle of the pitch, and those two midfield shuttlers and the two wide men up front do that role really well. And I thought that, as well as you maybe mentioned, you know, with Barisic and Tavernier maybe playing a little bit more withdrawn, it kind of seemed to me to tempt the wing-backs from Celtic up when they were yep. out of possession, and then there was those big gaps in behind them. So I felt that was quite smart from Rangers in terms of, you know, creating that space, and then, you know, obviously that's a lot of room to have against a three at the back. Yeah, just the kind of that compactness in the middle and being able to shuttle from side to side and keep that kind of uniform kind of line that they have. And like you mentioned, there was the people that Celtic might have expected to be able to do something in an individual situation, like Frimpong, they just didn't give him a chance. Frimpong didn't have a single dribble in this match, at least from my memory, because, you know, Barisic and Kamara just dealt with them so well, really closing off the space and, you know, forcing them back every time. And there were no kind of, kind of overloads or pairing up from Celtic, no kind of movements to deal with that. I think, again, limited by the system, but also limited by some of the pieces within the system, as you mentioned. You know, on that right-hand side, there's, you know, Duffy and Welsh are not really capable of bringing the ball forward or making a really good pass. Klamala, to me, was, I mean, I don't understand the Klamala purchase for a team like Celtic. I appreciate what you were saying earlier about, you know, being able to play on the last man, and that maybe if you think Rangers will, you know, have the fullbacks forward and so on, that makes sense. But I just think for the type of games that Celtic normally play, he doesn't really fit the profile of what I would be thinking to buy if I was a Celtic manager. And he was absolutely atrocious in this game, you know, just in terms of his lack of involvement, lack of passes, his pass completion, just pure non-involvement in the game. It was dreadful. So, yeah, anyway, though, and obviously a lot of credit needs to go to Rangers for that, but I do also think that the pieces and the places for Celtic were just not right at all. And the persistence for me as well in terms of playing El Yunusi as a forward, he's not a surrogate for Edward. They're not the same. You know, he might play on the left. He might have more, you know, technical skill than the other centre forwards, but it's not the same. I don't think that he's a front man in a 3-5-2. But again, as you pointed to, they're maybe a bit hamstrung in terms of other people that they need in if they're going to play a system of wingers. But yeah, something for them to think about. Anyway, let's move on to some actual action. So talk me through both the goals, Gavin, and particularly maybe for the opener. Let's talk not just about, you know, the free kick itself, but how was the free kick conceded? What kind of brought this? And then, you know, talk me through the goal itself.
Yeah, I just felt that Celtic were a bit, you know, sloppy. It was a foul that they didn't need to make necessarily as well. I felt like it wasn't the most dangerous of positions to make that sort of challenge. I just felt that it was, I can't remember who, was it McGregor who made the foul? I can't remember off the top of my head who actually committed it, but it just felt like it wasn't necessary. It wasn't like it was an extremely dangerous opportunity. And for the goal itself, I think there was a number of things. So first of all, it's smart by Conor Goldson to stay in the offside position and have his timing, you know, really well to make the yard step back to then go to get back onside. But for me, Shane Duffy has to be, well, you know what, this guy's we were sold that he was a super experienced pro, and, you know, he's played a load of games in the Premiership. And for me, how he sort of gives in so quickly and sort of folds the offside line for Celtic was just really disappointing. If anything, you would expect that from Welsh, not Duffy. I think the other thing that stood out for me is why was El Yunusi the player that was actually closest to Conor Goldson? I felt that was very strange in terms of when it came to the actual header itself. Barkas could do it a little bit better, but I think when you watch it back, it happens quickly, and there's a number of things that happen that shouldn't happen. Like I mentioned, why is El Yunusi on Goldson? Why did Duffy, step back when Goldson had stepped forward? It just felt like it was really poor from Celtic from a defensive line. And Barkas, I've seen a couple of people, giving him a lot of, I don't know how to word it, a lot of, almost like he's the sort of scapegoat for this, for what's happened, because he doesn't look like the most comfortable of goalkeepers. He looks a little bit awkward. And I think maybe his body shape and, the way that he even dives for the ball is a little bit awkward. But again, it wasn't his fault. There was things to stop it. And also with Barkas, when you look at him, like, these aren't going to be new things. If the Celtic had, scouted him properly, which you would assume they have, you would have seen that how he reacts is not the most conventional. So, yeah, I'm just a little bit dismayed with the full thing. And I think from, Neil Lennon's point of view, he'll be really disappointed with how that goal transpires.
Sure, yeah, I agree with all that, Gavin. I think it was Ayer that gave away the free kick, and it was in one of those kind of counterattacks that, Celtic were kind of being faced with, but where essentially, the Celtic back three were exposed and being run at, and I think he brought down Kent. But I agree with all your take about the goal. I think that, yeah, Duffy was supposed to be, this is supposed to be his forte, right? Okay, so we accept that he won't be an expert at distribution from the back. We accept that he can get turned and that, if it's played over his head, he's going to be pretty slow. But we know he's good in the air, right? He's a real threat from set pieces at the other end of the pitch. But part of that is also being in the right spot defensively and winning the ball. And I just think it was pretty disappointing from Celtic's point of view that he wasn't kind of owning that and stopping that from happening. I think it's absolutely brilliant delivery from Tavernier. What an incredible ball in. I think we should be paying a lot of tribute to him for just how brilliantly he's continued this season. Yet another season of many in a row where continues to be underrated even by his own fans in my view. But yeah, a beautiful delivery, a brilliant header from Goldson. I'm a fully paid up member of the Goalkeepers Union, so I do accept that often I'm a little bit more on their side than other people, but I just really don't think you can expect a goalkeeper to save that. I guess the way I look at it is that you want to be in a position where that question's not even been asked.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper shouldn't really have to be bailing people out. I know it's his job, but you want to avoid conceding chances of that sort. That even with a header, it's a pretty good chance. It's pretty close in. And I think it's very, very difficult to save that. I think it's past you before you react. I can see what you're saying about the way that Barkas looks. I mean, if you're used to looking at Foster and then you look at him, physically they're very different, aren't they? Yeah. In terms of their kind of frame and their posture and stuff. So I can see why it is a downgrade, right? Probably you would say, at least emotionally and probably in terms of quality. But he's been fine so far this season. I think that I wouldn't put any of the blame at his door for the first goal. What about a second goal, though? So talk me through this one. Is this one that Barkas has to take some blame for? What happened in the moments leading up to this goal? Was there anything we need to think about first before it gets to Barkas?
Yeah, I think it was a nice sort of little bit of interplay from Rangers from the corner. And I think it was Kamara absolutely does in Cham, I think it was, again off the top of my head, with it, just goes past him, then does a nice little cut back to Arfield. Arfield sort of drives into the box, and then he sort of drills it across, it takes the deflection, falls to the feet of Goldson. Goldson has an attempt, it's blocked, and then the ball sort of is stuck between Shane Duffy's legs, and Conor Goldson sort of side foots it through Shane Duffy's legs. Just past Barkas, who I think on this occasion he maybe could have done a little bit better. He's a little bit slow to react for me. But again, it just feels like the defensively Celtic were not... it lacked urgency from, if you watch how Ncham got done by Kamara. And then you watch, you know, I think it's Laxalt tries to get close to Arfield but doesn't get close enough. Arfield's unable to drill it across, and you know, it takes a deflection. But it just felt really, really sloppy again. And yeah, just a completely avoidable goal. You would, you know, from a Celtic perspective, I think there's a number of opportunities to deal with it. And I think from a Shane Duffy's point of view, how Conor Goldson's able to side foot the ball when the ball's in between his legs is just incredible. I really, you know, we mentioned that Duffy's been impressive so far from Celtic, but I think in this game he really didn't do it for me defensively. I was really concerned with his actual ability playing against a better style of opposition.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is quite an interesting goal, this one, because if you pull it all the way back to how Rangers got the corner, I think from memory they got the corner from Ayer trying to distribute it from the back for Celtic and not having many options and bringing it forward, and then Rangers kind of collapsing, the kind of pressing traps on him and getting a turnover. And then I think Ryan Kent almost gets through and scores, but it's cleared out for a corner. And after that, it felt like Rangers, yeah, they didn't get anything from the corner, but they did well to kind of keep the pressure on, to keep Celtic pinned back. And like you said, there's some really nice interplay passing here. Yes, the defending from Celtic is a bit lazy. Ncham's a bit slow to cover. I felt that throughout the game, Laxalt has a tendency to dive in and kind of get caught if he, you know, if somebody kind of passes smartly or plays a 1-2 behind him. And he got caught out in this a little bit by being drawn towards the ball and then not following Arfield. Same as you in the middle before it even gets to Barkas. So I think, yeah, Duffy needs to be a lot more aware. But I think it's Klamala that's marking Goldson initially. And, you know, Duffy's the kind of free man. I mean, I think either in that situation as a centre-back, you probably are maybe the guy that needs to be thinking, well, I need to take care of the most significant dangers here. And probably Klamala's not the guy that I want marking somebody 6 yards out. So I'm going to take over and kind of, you know, own the situation. Didn't do that. Kind of stood off Goldson and then kind of realised he was there, but still gave him way too much space. And I think that, I mean, I think it's incredibly tough to have a go at Barkas for this, because a shot comes in from 5 yards out and it's Barkas has dived, basically, but then it's blocked by Duffy and then the shot is there right away again. I think that maybe it's the way that Barkas looks, the kind of stance and the kind of way that he, you know, kind of moves a wee bit is affecting how people see him. But I think if you're seeing him as the main issue in that goal,
no,
I don't know what you expect of goalkeepers, because you must think they're superhuman. And B, if you don't mind conceding chances like that, as long as you have a goalkeeper to bail you out, you're going to lose games. If you keep conceding chances like that, it's not a you know, kind of sustainable approach, no matter who your goalkeeper is. But two bad goals to concede, really, in many ways, and people should have done better for Celtic. But again, credit for Goldson, penalty box striker and everything there. I guess let's move on now to something a bit more general. So we've kind of spoken through the match, but I think throughout our discussion of lineups, tactics, goals and so on, what we're maybe kind of seeing is that there's maybe a little bit more of a kind of bigger picture to this situation for maybe Celtic and Rangers. This result, you would say, didn't kind of come out of anywhere. Celtic have had previous poor performances, I think, in terms of making chances. So the Kilmarnock match, Dundee United, St Johnston, some European games. And I think we would both say that Rangers have kind of steadily improved over the last, you know, few seasons in terms of their coaching and tactics. And the other thing I was thinking about is that, in my view, maybe in some ways, it feels like the balance of power in terms of recruitment is shifting a wee bit. So Rangers now have depth. You know, when you look at their bench on Saturday, that's a markedly different bench to what you might have seen from Rangers maybe, you know, a year ago in a game against Celtic. And comparatively, like we said, Celtic maybe have this kind of imbalanced squad. Four centre forwards who all expect to play. A lack of wingers, maybe. Players loaned in. I know this is a drum that I continue to beat, and I think most Celtic fans tend to tell me that they don't care as long as they win. Well, you're not winning now. But also, I guess, to me, it's just abnormal, right? You don't see any other team that's been dominating their league and making cash for years and years, having to bring people in as last minute kind of, you know, loans and stopgaps and stuff, to me, it just smacks of bad strategy, late, seemingly unplanned moves. There's this understandable, but still obsession, in my view, with winning 10 in a row. And maybe that's kind of affecting Celtic and their decision-making in terms of the long term. I guess, just to see what your kind of general thoughts are about this, any kind of conclusions you would take or any opinions from this. And the other things just to note as well is maybe mentality. So Rangers have maybe faced criticism under Gerrard for kind of not seeing things through, letting things, you know, slip away when they had the opportunity. But there didn't seem to be a lot of passion or urgency from Celtic in this game, either on the pitch or on the sidelines. And to me, if you've got Lennon, Brown, Duffy, that's what they're supposed to be there for to an extent. So what's going on there? You know, if the people you're saying are maybe disinterested or don't give you the passion are people like Edward, well, he wasn't there, you know. And also, I guess, finally, just to see if you have any idea if things would have played out differently if Celtic had full players, or should they really be in a position where that doesn't matter? You know, what's your kind of general thoughts, Cam?
I think you've ticked a lot of the boxes in terms of the general theory around about both these teams. I think you're right to call it the depth that Rangers now have. I think, you know, Etienne, Joe Aribo, Ryan Jack, all on the bench is real positive, strong players that Rangers were able to, you know, bring off the bench to help, you know, see out the victory. You know, they were missing Kamar Roof, who they had a fair outlay for. I think that level of quality off the bench definitely wasn't there last year. And obviously, I've not even mentioned Yanis Hadji. So I think when you compare that to Celtic, I think there definitely seems to be a bit more of a strategy and a bit more consistency with a roundabout approach to bringing players in. I think for Celtic, it does stem from recruitment, really. I think you're right to call out, you know, some of these last-minute moves. And obviously, they weren't to know of what happened with Bolognoli, but at the same time, they could have known because they should have an understanding of when their players are leaving the country. Regardless of, you know, if someone's going rogue, that just shouldn't be an option for a professional football club. I think that looking at, you know, the recruitment of spending $5 million on Ayeti, the money on Turnbull, it just seems like they didn't actually address some of the actual more desperate needs, and they just added to the problems that were already there. I'm just a little bit bemused by Celtic, and I think you're right to call out though. Lennon, Duffy, Brown are all there as almost like, you know, ringleaders, cheerleader types for, you know, the passion and understanding what Celtic's all about. And if they don't deliver that, then Celtic don't really have anything else against the better opponents, and we've seen that in Europe as well. This isn't a new story. We, like I mentioned in the last few Old Firms, Rangers have been, you know, the last three, for sure at least, Rangers have been the better team. So I think there needs to be some questions asked about how Celtic turned this around. And I don't think going to, you know, Tom Rogic and Lee Griffiths late in the day is going to be enough against Rangers anymore.
Yeah, and even if it is, let's say Celtic turn this around in terms of winning a league, which is possible, because you'd imagine it's still going to be tight, and they, you know, could win one of the or two of the future Celtic Rangers games. For me, maybe it's more about they should be so much further ahead at this point. Thought really, you know, with the kind of effective head start they had, with, you know, Rangers being not in the top flight, and, you know, the kind of perhaps mess Rangers have had in terms of their hierarchy and managers and so on. It just seems to me like for Celtic, I just don't think you should have a setup that is working, that's operating like this in terms of the recruitment and stuff, and in terms of the kind of tactics on the pitch as well. It just doesn't seem like what should be happening for a club like that, really. That would be what I'd say. And I think you and I would both also say that there's been some extreme knee-jerking I've seen on Twitter and so on after this game, you know, people talking about sacking Lennon, bringing in Eddie Howe, all sorts of kind of stuff. I don't think, for me, it's something like that. I think that would just, you know, that doesn't work to just sack Lennon at this point, in my view. But I think the point I'm making there is that it feels like you and I have maybe been talking about this for a long time, you know, from when, you know, Lennon was in the shower and given the job, or even before that, in terms of, you know, the kind of recruitment under Brendan Rodgers and stuff, and the kind of sort of lack of strategy in these kind of ongoing late loan deals and stuff like that. It just, I don't know. Obviously, you know, they know a lot more about managing a football club than I do and operating one. And I appreciate it's a very, very difficult thing to do. But it just seems that if you contrast the way that Rangers are operating right now with the way Celtic are operating, one club seems to be doing things in an impressive way, and the other maybe doesn't. But that doesn't mean that Celtic won't win the league. And I guess that comes maybe back to the point that maybe for Celtic fans and maybe for Celtic the club and for Lowell and for Lennon, really all that matters at the moment is winning 10 in a row. But for me, maybe that's a slightly damaging pursuit in the more medium to long term, you know. That's some interesting stuff there about Celtic and Rangers. I guess the final thing I wanted to kind of think about was the weeks ahead. This is not the last of the tough matches for Celtic. So Celtic have Milan in the Europa League this Thursday. They've then got Aberdeen in the league. They've then got Lille in the Europa League. They've then got Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup semi. Rangers have got Standard Liège in the Europa League, then Livingston in the league, then Lech Poznan in the Europa League, and then Kilmarnock in the league. I want to just get your prediction. You don't need to give me a score, but just win, draw, or loss for each of the games. Is that all right, Gavin? I'll just go through them one after another. Cool. Milan, Celtic Milan.
Loss.
Okay. Celtic Aberdeen.
Draw.
Okay. Celtic Lille.
Loss.
Celtic Aberdeen Cup.
Win.
Okay. And not very good looking one for Celtic there. What about for Rangers? Got Standard Liège in Europa Cup, Europa League rather.
It's going to be a draw for me.
Okay. Livingston in the league.
It's a home win.
Okay. Lech Poznan in Europa.
Home win.
Okay, and Kilmarnock in the league.
It's a home. It's a away win for Rangers in that one as well.
Okay, right. So Rangers are getting 3 wins and a draw. Celtic are getting 1 win, a draw, and 2 losses out of the next month. Okay, interesting. I'm going to keep an eye on that and we'll see how it goes. So that's everything kind of wrapped up in terms of Celtic and Rangers and the Glasgow derby. Unless there's anything else you want to add on to that, Gavin, before we move forward.
I think the only thing just worth calling out just finally is that the next 4 games for Celtic after this aren't much easier either. So it could be a real difficult spell for Celtic. And even if they do win these, it just feels like they've got a lot of fixtures that could be tricky to deal with. And I would really keep an eye over the next sort of 8 weeks on the performances of Neil Lennon and Celtic.
Okay, so maybe not Eddie Howe now, but maybe Eddie Howe in December.
Yeah, is maybe.
That, you know,
Eddie.
Eddie a bit later. Yeah,
Eddie a bit later.
Okay, let's move forward to our next topic, which is some lower league players. So, yeah, we're going to offset the Scottish Premiership tie, the Celtic and Rangers tie, by looking at a few players that we are both excited to watch and to look forward and watch the season out with the Scottish Premiership. I think Gavin and I didn't share the few people that we picked each before we just kind of met to do the podcast. We then realised that I think both of us had kind of felt that the other person might want to mention Dylan Tate of Raith Rovers. And as a result, neither of us put him in. So we're going to give a wee kind of shout out to Dylan Tate first of all. And I think one of the reasons why we want to do that is that Gavin and I both really like Raith Rovers as a team to watch. I think we're kind of fans of the management and the coaching team there. And with them being up in the Championship now, I think Gavin and I are going to stake our colours, nail our colours to the mast and in opposition to Cammy's Dunfermline Athletic and Chrissy's Green at Morton from the Pure Championship show. I think Gavin and I are going to say that Raith Rovers are kind of dark horse for the championship this season, and that of course includes Dylan Tate, who's an 18-year-old. Don't think he turns 19 until later on this year, kind of December. Central midfielder, who, you know, we're really looking forward to seeing as much of him as possible this season, to kind of, you know, he's already got a successful spell yep. for them in League One. Didn't play, you know, every game, but towards the end of the kind of curtailed season, he was getting a lot more minutes, and hopefully he should get a good run out in the championship. Anything you want to say about Dylan before we kind of move on to the guys that we did actually end up picking, Gavin?
Yeah, just that I think, just to echo quickly what you said, that he's getting more minutes as the season progressed. I think he's really good on the ball. He contributes in terms of the defensive phases. I like the way he plays on the sort of on the pivot movements, and he's just got a nice range of passing, able to transition really quickly, comfortable carrying the ball forward. So ticks a lot of boxes for me. And for someone at such a young age, he really impresses me, and I really look forward to seeing how he does. And I hopefully follows in the footsteps of our other favourite, Kieran Bowie, and, you know, manages to get a good move and keep developing. So definitely one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. And he played in race 3-0 victory against Arbroath at a weekend. So a really good start to the season for him. I think he played pretty much all of the game, if I'm right, and got an assist. So yeah, one to look out for. Let's move on to the guys we actually did pick then. You got your first one for me? Who
yep.
did you pick?
Yep, so I chose a championship player in Luke McCowan, who I know Chris Sampson is a big fan of from the championship pod. He plays for Ayr United. Mm-hmm. He's a sort of right winger, right 10, really creative, good on the ball. You know, I like how he contributes in terms of goals and assists. I think he's a player that can really make the step up, and he actually got sent off at the weekend, but I have a feeling that there might be some teams looking at him shortly. I think he's got that bit of, he's not the most technical in the sense of like a skillful, you know, wants to dribble past his man. He's more of a makes things happen when he gets on the ball, if you get where I'm going with that. And I think he's just someone that you can almost, like, I guess, like the way that Scott Arfield kind of plays for Rangers at times when he plays in more advanced areas. He's just someone that's going to come up in the right areas. But I just think he's someone to keep an eye on, to see how he progresses there. Of, you know, they won at the weekend, and yeah, just someone that I like the look of, and I think he's a good value player, and he's coming into the final year of his contract. So it'll be interesting to see what happens come January, whether someone does something like, you know, what Motherwell done with Liam Polworth. So yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on.
Okay, great. My first one to watch is Jamie Semple, who's on loan from Motherwell at Cove Rangers in League One. Jamie's just 19 years old and only recently turned 19. You know, he's a May 2001 born. He's got Scotland under 17 and under 19 caps. And yeah, he played the full 90 minutes against Brora Rangers in the League Cup for Cove Rangers recently, scoring in a 2-2 draw. Brora actually pegged Cove back from 2-0 down. But Semple then went and scored one of the penalties in the, you know, the shootout for the point. So, you know, obviously a good performance for him in that. He came on as a sub for Cove against Hibs in the League Cup game before the one against Brora. And then just at the weekend there, he started and played almost all of their win against East Fife. That was actually Cove's 15th home league win in a row, which is pretty incredible. I think, you know, he had, prior to joining Cove Rangers, he had a couple of League Cup appearances for Motherwell and some very limited minutes off the bench over the last couple of years. But this is a great opportunity for him to actually play, and in a good team at a good level, I think he should be really excited with the opportunity. So he's essentially an attacking midfielder. I think for Cove, he might be playing quite centrally. Obviously, unfortunately, not probably going to get the opportunity to see them or him in person this season. But hopefully we'll get a chance to see some of the live streams, if not at least some highlights, because could be a really interesting one to watch. And I think similarly to your mention about McCowan, He's out of contract next summer, so it's intriguing that it's a season-long loan, as far as I'm aware. So I don't know if, you know, Motherwell are going to, you know, see how he does in the early part of that, and then potentially offer him a new contract, or, you know, if this is just a way for him to play himself into something. But we'll see. But one to keep an eye on. And I'll go with my second just now, given that they'll be presumably playing each other next weekend, because my second pick is Kieran Freeman, who's at Peterhead, and they're Cove Rangers opponents this coming Saturday. So Freeman's a fullback, right back. He's on loan from Dundee United. He's 20 years old. He turns 21 in late March of next year. He's somebody that's had a very difficult start to his career. So he was originally at Dundee United, then he went to Southampton about 4 years ago, you know, his kind of mid-teens. But he got a series of very bad injuries. So he did his anterior cruciate ligament, and then he did the meniscus in both knees. So he was 16 or 17, was out for about a year with the first injury. Then he was back playing for about 2 months, and then he was out for another year with his knee. So he kind of reckons that over the kind of 3.5 years he had in total at Southampton, he was injured for about 2.5 of those years. So, you know, that's obviously pretty gutting. Anyway, he's been released, and he re-signed for Dundee United again. And he's had a couple of league appearances for them earlier this season. You know, he played against Celtic and I think Ross County. But he's now come to Peterhead on loan, and he played a full 90 in the league opener against Airdrie. So this is fantastic for him to be back, you know, even just playing football. And I think that League One, you know, should be a good place for him to develop and show that, you know, there's obviously something there, given that Mellon, you know, played him a bit earlier in the season, and that, you know, he was so sought after when he was younger. But yeah, he needs to get minutes under his belt and kind of show that he's able to put it together on a consistent basis. So those are my two kind of first ones. What about you, Gavin? You got a second guy you want to talk about?
Yeah, so the next one for me is Anton Douds, who's just signed for Falkirk from East Fife. Douds is someone who, he's a striker, but I'd say he plays probably best just off the main sort of striker. I think he makes lots of smart movement off the ball, pulls into the channels, happy to be involved, collecting the ball at feet. You know, someone that I think is quite an intelligent player, but he needs to develop a bit of his technical ability. I think he's, at times he can be a little bit rash in front of goals and a little bit rash in terms of his decision making when he receives the ball. But he does all the things that you want to see. He just needs to be a little bit sharper when he actually has the possession. But another thing that really stands out for me with Dowes is just his constant effort off the ball. Someone that works really hard for the team, competes for everything, you know, presses aggressively, you know, puts in the tackles, you know, happily, you know, go up with a centre-back to try and win a header. Just someone that I think, you know, you kind of want to have. And I think for Falkirk, they've got a number of striking options like Connor Salmon, Lee Miller, who are bigger target men. I think Dowes just off them would be quite nice. I think being able to run onto the sort of flick-ons potentially, but he's just someone that I think, I remember watching East Fife against Rangers, actually that was with you, I think, and I think he was just one of the few names that got pass marks for me from an East Fife perspective. And I think that, you know, moving from East Fife to Falkirk, it's not a huge jump, but Falkirk are going to be expected to challenge for the title, and I think Dowds' ability to get involved and to, you know, carry the ball and make smart runs will just be really important for Falkirk when it comes to chasing for the title. And yeah, it's a nice pickup for me from Falkirk, and you know, at the age of 23, he's still got the opportunity to develop and, you know, do some of that refinement that I mentioned as well.
That's a really good shout, Gavin. I agree with that around him. I've got another person, so we'll go on to my third one, and that's Jaden Fairley. So Jaden Fairley is really, really young. I think he turned 17 less than a month ago, but he's on loan now at Stenhouse Muir in League 2 from Hibs. He's got Scotland under-16, under-17 appearances, and he's quite an interesting one to me. So Hibs have also sent somebody else on loan to Stenhouse Muir with him. So they've sent Callum Yates, who's a 19-year-old left-back also there. But the one to really watch is Fairley. And mainly that's for me just out of interest due to how young he is to be going on loan like that. I'm not sure if I can really work out what to think of it. I guess, you know, you and I are often quite keen to see, you know, young players get a chance to play and develop and stuff, but it seems extraordinarily young. I wonder maybe the absence or likely absence of much reserve and youth football is kind of playing into that. It's likely that even, you know, under 18 games for clubs are going to be restricted and maybe off and on again and stuff. But anyway, very young. But Fairley's a he's a midfielder. He's technically very good, nice passer, but he's also pretty good defensively to me. It's going to be quite tough for him given his age and size. But my understanding is that Hibs and Stenhouse Muir have got regular check-ins every 6 weeks to kind of discuss performance and progress. So I'm sure all those things are going to be monitored. But he's one that it'll be really, really intriguing to see how somebody of that sort gets on in that division. I think part of the point maybe you and I are talking about this is that we maybe would say that as much as there's obviously a jump and a gulf from, you know, the Championship to Premiership and so on, we maybe think there's an opportunity for a little bit more mobility between the leagues and for maybe people that show that they can do it at a younger level, a lower level, particularly from a younger age, then maybe being able to get back up the division quite quickly and, you know, land somewhere even if it's not their parent club. And we've, you know, obviously seen lots of success stories in terms of people doing that recently. But, you know, that's kind of why I'm interested to see how it goes for him. Do you have another one you want to mention, another player?
Yep. Yeah, Kyle McDonald at Airdrie, sticking on with my League One pick there. So he's a right-back who played 24 games at the age of 19 for Airdrie in League One. He started the season really well, but for me, McDonald, what's impressive is his ability to create things, almost like a League One version of James Tavernier. He had an expected assist of 0.24 per 90 last season for Airdrie, which I think is really impressive for, you know, a fullback, and especially for a team like Airdrie. Puts in lots of good crosses into dangerous areas, but he likes to carry the ball forward, and he was, you know, successful with 4.38 dribbles per 90 again, which had him in the sort of 90th percentile for carrying the ball forward. And I think he's a player that, again, still has to develop at the age of 20. There's some things defensively that he needs to, you know, brush up on and needs to be a little bit smarter when he's actually retaining possession. But if you want a fullback to create and bomb forward, I think Kyle McDonald is certainly one you want to keep an eye on. You know, he works really hard as well, just off the ball, lots of interceptions. Just someone I think a fullback in modern football is a very valuable position. And I just wouldn't be surprised if he continues his trajectory with Airdrie that, you know, a Scottish Premiership team couldn't see the value in asking him to jump a division or two. So, yeah, Kyle McDonald's definitely one for me this season.
Excellent. I really like that shout. You know, I'm always kind of behind the fullbacks are important players agenda. Always have been. So my next and final one, fourth, is probably not a surprise to you or regular listeners or followers. That's Chris Mochrie of Montrose. So Chris Mochrie is 17, so another very young player, and he's going to be doing it in League One. He's on loan at Montrose from Dundee United, and he's a player I'm really excited about from what I've seen of him. The way I kind of maybe first became aware of Mochrie is through, I guess, our kind of cheerleading of an under Dundee United player. So whenever you and I would maybe be going on about Declan Glass, who unfortunately has suffered quite a serious injury at the start of his time at Partick Thistle. But anyway, whenever you or I might be going on about Declan Glass, quite often got messages saying, well, yeah, Glass is good, but have you seen Mochrie? You know, for attacking midfielders at Dundee United of a young age, he's potentially even better. And he's really, really exciting. So I've managed to see a fair bit of him now. He's played for Scotland under-17s and under-16s. He's a attacking midfielder, kind of, from the times I've seen him at least, tends to be on the sort of left-hand side, but not out wide, ideally, as a winger. You know, a guy that kind of wants to operate in the half spaces. His attributes are technique, essentially. That's the kind of main thing, you know, so the passing, the vision, the ball control. Maybe not somebody at this point who has, you know, the kind of high-end athleticism that you need to be to be in a real kind of wide position. So he's maybe going to be maybe more of a playmaker in my view. So it'll be interesting to see how that translates to a league like League One, where, you know, maybe are the runs there for you, you know, from other players that you need for a player like Mockery? You know, is somebody going to be making the movements that he needs and able to thread through the through balls? I don't know. Are other people going to be able to hold on to the ball long enough to mean that having his sort of valuable passing is of value, or is it better just to go a bit more direct and bypass somebody like him? Well, you'd hope not, but you know, we need to kind of wait and see how that plays out. I think he'll do really well. I think that Montrose is a good club for him to be at. It seems like he'll get opportunities. So their first league game at the weekend was against Falkirk, obviously one of the more difficult ties that they'll face. I think Falkirk had three former internationalists that they would be able to bring off the bench if they wanted to, which is just unreal for League One. And they obviously Montrose lost 3-1, but Mockery played almost all the game, I think 87 minutes. So that's really promising that he's been trusted from the start there. And he wasn't getting any game time at Dundee United. I mean, obviously he's very, very young, but he was kind of on the bench for multiple games in the Premiership this season, but didn't get off the bench at all. So I'm quite excited about the fact that he's gone out somewhere, and we'll see how that leads in terms of his development. What about you? Any thoughts on Mockery, or is there anybody else you want to mention, Gavin?
I'll give you both. First of all, I'll give you my thoughts on Mockery. I think, you know, I think this is a nice move. Montrose are quite a nice team. Stuart Petrie is a good coach. So I'm really excited to see how that pans out. And I think it's a little bit of a surprise, I guess, for me that he's went from being on the fringes of the Dundee United team to then going down to League One. Potentially could have seen a couple of Championship teams looking at him. But I guess what Dundee United will probably think is it's probably more important that he plays regular minutes if he's going to follow the trajectory that they want him to. So maybe it's a case of getting a full year's worth of football in him, and then next year he's ready to be part of the first team. So definitely excited for that one. And I'm gonna go to a Montrose alumni, Mohamed Niang, who has just signed for Partick Thistle this summer. I am a little bit worried about the Partick Thistle squad in terms of the depth and central areas. They've got a lot of options, and I worry whether Niang will be able to fit in. But what Niang is really good at, and take this in the context that he's meant, but he's going to be the Maryhill Canty. He's someone that, you know, works extremely hard off the ball. He's someone that puts in, you know, lots of tackles, puts in lots of effort off the ball. I think he had almost identical interceptions as N'Golo Kanté per 90. Obviously, it's a much different league, but I'm just using it as a comparison. He's got a few things to still to develop in terms of his capability on the ball, but for a young player, I really like his effort, and I really like his ability to not just win the ball back, but he's actually really good at driving forward into dangerous areas once he wins it. So I quite like the look of Niang, and I feel like if Partick Thistle want to be smart, they'll want to try and get him into the squad, because his skill set is the sort of skill set that, again, I think is quite valuable in modern football. Ball winners that can carry the ball forward, can get into the box.
You're right in my agenda, Gavin. So not only is it fullbacks, it's the two-way midfielder club as well. I love it, absolutely. I don't know why I mentioned all these attacking midfielders and guys that just float about in the half space. No, those are my types. So I'm excited to hear that about Niang. Sounds like a real prospect. That's good. Anything else you want to add on about
him? Just I think that the only thing to be cautious about is how difficult it'll be to get minutes ahead of Stuart Bannigan, Ross Docherty, you know, seasoned pros. Mm-hmm. So I just think that it's almost a bit of a shame, because I think had they not had already bought Ross Docherty, then Niang might have got even more of an opportunity to play. And I hope they can find a way, because again, when it comes to developing assets and having players of value, Niang's one that ticks a big box for me.
I like the way you're thinking about this as well. Like, you know, not just how will this player be for this club this season, but how can the club approach it? You know, are they buying in or bringing in the type of profile that maybe, you know, they can then think, well, can we move them on, you know, in future and so on. Very interesting. So yeah, that's kind of us for today. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we're very happy with how many people are listening, both old and new. As you may have noticed, we're sort of leaning at the moment towards a format that kind of has one match to analyse and one or two sort of topics. We, I think, feel that this allows us to maybe go a little bit more in depth about the match and avoid just kind of running through goals and events of an individual match or even all six Premiership matches. But we're open to hearing, you know, how you, the listener, feel about the approach and the content of the show. So feel free as ever to drop us a review or even just a DM on Twitter with any feedback. And just want to kind of reiterate, if you have the chance to, please do share the podcast with a friend, family, anything like that, and drop us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen if you're able to. Gavin, is there anything else you want to kind of leave the listeners with today?
Just thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Goodbye.